This is a unique and bonus episode on this podcast, and it will be particularly interesting for anybody who has thought about or who wants to be a sex coach for men, or for anybody who's curious to understand a little bit of the behind the scenes of what it's like to be a sex coach for men and some possible ways to get there. I think this work, sex coaching and sex education, is critically important right now in today's world. If you're anybody like me, like you grew up with pretty shitty sex education and a complete lack of positive role models, and we're living in a context in a world where most people just don't know how to have the most amazing sex that's possible. They don't even know that it's an option. And there are millions of men around the world who are seeking support with this and who are seeking options. So let me or Cam know if you have any questions about this. And unfortunately, the video didn't work because the internet connection wasn't that great. But that's what originally podcasts were for anyway. So here we go. Without further ado, let's get into today's episode. I am a firm believer that all of our sex lives would improve if we as men started talking more openly about sex on a regular basis, sharing the good stuff, but then also sharing the hard stuff with each other, in our friendships, in our communities, in therapy, and even with sex coaches if we choose to work with them sometimes. And I've been really stoked to see over the past bunch of years, there are a lot more men putting content out there into the world trying to help other men have better sex lives. And that's just super inspiring to see. And I'm so excited today to be here with Cam Fraser, who is a sexologist and a sex coach from the other side of the world in Australia, who not only has been talking about and helping other men improve their sex lives for many years, but who has now created a program to teach other men, or to teach anybody, I believe, how to coach men to improve their sexuality. And that's just awesome and inspiring to see. So thank you, Cam, so much for being here. I'm excited to get into all of that and much more with you today.
Thanks so much, man. I'm excited to be here chatting to you. I also feel very inspired by your content and the work that you're putting out into the world. And yeah, it's really nice to connect with people that, especially men, you know, that I align with and that I get a lot of value from. I'm stoked to be here too.
Yeah. I want to ask you some personal questions about your life, like how you got to be a sex coach, what inspired you to do that, and et cetera. But just to ask a clarifying question up front, the program that you're leading now, it's open to all genders. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, you got that correct, man. It's open to open to everyone. Interestingly enough, and maybe we can get into this, I have had a lot of women wanting to be students and go through the certification, which is amazing. And I feel inspired that there's so many women that want to better serve their male clients. But the bane of my life, brother, is trying to get some men through the door and wanting to coach other men and wanting to step into those spaces. So yeah, maybe we can speak about maybe our opinions about why that is. But I thought that was just an interesting little insight.
Yeah, and I'd be into having a little bit of a meta conversation too about our own lives and our own careers as sex coaches for anybody that's interested. Like, that would be interesting to me. And I think as a listener, like, I imagine that would be interesting to you too, like see a little bit behind the veil of what it is that we do and how we got to where we are and like what's effective, what's not effective, why are we coaches, et cetera. Because I've worked with a lot of people over the years, and one of the pieces of feedback that I regularly get is that it's so nice for men to work with another man who actually understands how their body works and the same sort of sociological programming that they grew up with. You know, there's a certain kind of empathy that can be experienced that way that's really potent and useful. I'm not trying to say women can't give useful empathy and help coach men, but there's definitely a certain kind of goodness that can come from men connecting with other men about this. So I'd love to dive into that.
Definitely agree with that, man. And, you know, I can share from my own personal experience that I feel like I've lacked male role models in my life, especially around sexuality in particular. I have shared on plenty of other podcasts before that when I was growing up, around the age of like 14, 15, when I started to like be interested in, you know, girls and wanting to date and have sex and be sexual, I was looking for male role models. I was looking for men, you know, who could offer some guidance, some practical advice, a bit of wisdom to share from a, you know, and I was wanting it to be from a place of compassion and from a place of, you know, wisdom and almost like from a paternal place even. And the only people, and this is, you know, I'm 30 now, so this is going back 15, 16 years. The only people at that time that I could find were pickup artists and you're like pretty what I would say gross dating guru type figures. And they weren't, at least in my retrospective opinion, they weren't teaching from a place of compassion for like men or for women for that matter. And they weren't teaching from a place of like sex and pleasure positivity. And they weren't even teaching accurate information. Now that I think back on it, like even just like medically accurate information, there was a lot of like misinformation. So, and you know, I got swept up in that. You know, I went into the pickup artist groups. I went quote unquote sarging, you know, I read the books and things like that. And so I'm familiar with the rhetoric and with the approaches and with the way that dating and sex is framed in those spaces. And they've obviously evolved over the last almost two decades. And that's an interesting, you know, space to kind of talk about the quote unquote seduction community. But really like stepping out of those spaces and realizing that I was in a pretty bad mental health space and I was being exploited and preyed upon by the men in those communities, and recognizing that like I wanted to have good pleasurable sex both for me and for my partner, and that wasn't being offered by the teachings from these guys, was like a really like transformative realization for me to have. And like it resulted from a bunch of things that happened to me, like as a late teen, I suppose, with regards to you know, some injuries that I had in my lower back, and that required rehabilitation. It also coincided with like going to therapy, actually, as a matter of fact, and stopping drinking as well. So there's a bunch of things that like happened in when I was about 18, 19 years old that really took me out of that community and on a bit of a different path to, you know, study psychology and counseling and sexology, and then go into yoga and tantra and sacred sexuality, and then try and bring those two worlds together. So yeah, a lot of the reason why I do this work today and really speak to male sexuality and men's experiences of pleasure and, you know, male bodies and things like that is because it's the stuff that I wish someone had told me 15 years ago. So the approach that I take, I try and be as compassionate, non-judgmental and shame-free as possible, and celebratory. Like what I really dislike is trying to press on men's pain points and make them feel inadequate and make them feel like they're inferior or not enough because they don't do this particular sex act, or they're not having this much sex, or whatever it might be. So I try and I really am hyper-vigilant about not making men feel shit about themselves. And so the like celebratory approach that I try and take, and the invitation to step into your curiosity around your sexuality and your masculinity, is like what I never had when I was growing up. I was made to feel like really insecure and made to feel really anxious about my masculinity and my sexual performance, and that only worsened my mental health and my drinking. And so I'm wanting to like rewrite that script really for me at the end of the day, and it seems to just be really resonating with a lot of other men. So that's really lovely to see.
Yeah, we share a lot of similar journeys, it sounds like, which is super cool to hear. And I'm curious, was there a certain point at which, well, let me back up a second. It sounds like you experienced some challenges and some desire for growth in that area of your life. And then I'm imagining at a certain point you started to experience different levels of success, having the types of sex that you wanted to, which was meaningful and connective and highly pleasurable for both you and your partner without using them and checking a notch on the belt, right? So was there a point after that where you thought, hey, you know what? I'd love to share this with the world. Like, I want to be a sex coach. Or how did that come to be?
Yeah, so I wasn't a little boy and thinking that the thing that I wanted to do when I grew up was become a sex coach. I was originally, my plan was to originally become an engineer, and then I did one unit of engineering and I was like, this fucking blows, man. I can't do this for the rest of my life. No disrespect to engineers, but I just couldn't do it. And so I went and did psychology instead. And my intention was to become a clinical psychologist. I was going to go into clinical practice and, you know, pursue all the fucking relevant qualifications and tertiary education and whatnot. And I was really interested, and what I still am kind of interested in, but it just looks a little bit differently today, is I was going to go into the rehabilitation of sex offenders. That was like my interest. Was to go into clin psych in the prison system. And I don't really know why, to be totally honest with you, man. I think I was like interested in, I'm deeply interested in psychology. So that's, you know, ticks that box. But I think the sexuality side of things, like I'd always had an interest in sexuality. I was the kind of kid, teen that had, you know, books about like cunnilingus and, you know, fingering and things on my bookshelf, and, you know, I had mates come around and be like, hey, can I borrow that book? And, you know, I've got a date later on. And so, you know, I was always kind of that little sex nerd kind of kid. Yeah. But yeah, I think I just saw you know what it was? I think it was because I spent a bit of time in university in the deep south of America. So I was in Georgia, of all places, actually, the conservative, well, I mean, Georgia's pretty conservative, you know, but the conservative part of Georgia, which is like rural Georgia in the middle of it. So not Atlanta, not Savannah, but right smack bang in the middle of the state. And I saw a lot of emotional abuse. I saw some physical abuse, don't get me wrong, but there was a lot of like coercion, manipulation, suppression as well of sexuality and of people in relationships, particularly women in those relationships, a lot of heterosexual relationships, of course, because it was a sin to come out as homosexual. And so one of my friends in that community was closeted, and he only really spoke to me about it because I was non-judgmental. I came, obviously, coming from Australia, I had a very different you know, perspective on sexuality than the people in his life at the moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I was like, I think I had a light bulb moment around that time of like, fuck, people need this education. People need this space to heal. And I was like, yeah, I was just interested in like the rehabilitation side of things, the prison system side of things, because yeah, I don't like, and this is maybe more retrospective now, but like there's nothing really happening there. Like offenders are put in to the system. And this is across the board for regardless of what your offense is, regardless of what the crime you commit is, it's just like throw them in there, lock away the key and like pray they never come back into civilized society. Right. And like, that's not effective, right? It's just not working. It's the deterrent system, and we know that's not working at all. So we need to like have some systems in place to help people, like I said, rehabilitate and reintegrate into society after they've, you know, committed an offense. So that was like, you know, what I was interested in. And like I said, I still kind of am. But to, in a roundabout way, get to your question around being a sex coach, I kind of realized, fuck, that's a lot of work, firstly, to go the clin psych route, and the amount of study and the time and the, let's be real, money I would have to spend to kind of get the relevant qualifications to get into that line of work was a lot, you know. And it's also heavy. It's heavy work, you know what I mean? Like it's psychologically taxing, and some of the units that I did for my postgraduate degree were like about, they were criminology and forensic psychology units. And so they were like looking at some pretty nasty stuff. And I just kind of went, whoa, this is going to be, I'm going to have a pretty, you know, rough like job if I do this, you know, for a career. And it's probably going to take a toll on me. So I was like, all right, I'm going to pop the brakes on that. And I'm still interested in sex. I'm still interested in, you know, helping people with regards to sexuality. At that time, I'd been exposed to like sexuality education as a profession, and like really enjoyed like the practical side of it, of like, here's how to do things. You know, it wasn't the classic, which I got in high school, here's how to put a condom on a banana, right? It was much more like comprehensive of like, here's, you know, the different types of condoms, here's how you can make a condom feel better, here's like, you know, it was very sex and pleasure positive, which was fantastic. And that was studying at university in Western Australia. And so I was like, wow, this is like something that is much more, you know, fun. It's much more practical, and I could feel like I could help many more people, you know, from that approach than the rehabilitation approach. And I was also at the same time I was studying that postgrad degree, I was teaching yoga, you know, and I was going to, you know, I was doing like neo tantra style workshops, you know, sacred sexuality events. And I was, you know, running a retreat as well, you know, with a partner of mine. And so like the light bulb again kind of went off, and I was like, gee, there's something here to like bring in the sexological Western medicine perspective with like the you know, esoteric mystery tradition, like neo tantra, Taoist kind of practices, and blending those together in a way that's like going to be helpful for people who want to, you know, improve their sexual experiences. And and so I started counseling. I hadn't found the role of coach immediately. I started doing counseling sessions because I was a registered counselor, and just focusing really on sexuality concerns. And that was great, but I quickly realized how limited I was in the role of counselor. And talk therapy is great, and I still get talk therapy today, but in the approach that I wanted to take, there were so many other modalities that I wasn't allowed to implement and integrate into my counseling. So I kind of shopped around and saw what other modalities there were, and found the sex coaching kind of modality, and went through like the vetting process for that with the World Association of Sex Coaches, which is, I'm very lucky to, my supervisor is Dr. Selena Chris, who is the head of the World Association of Sex Coaches. So I'm lucky enough to, like, after membership, then reach out to her and do, you know, work with her. But like that as a modality feels much more appropriate for like the educating and the teaching that I like to do with men and with people in general, but you know, specifically with men, and it allows me to draw on a much broader variety of modalities and bring in a bunch of other stuff. And I can get on my clients' cases, you know, I can fucking kick them up the ass and keep them accountable, which I couldn't do as a counselor. I definitely find, particularly for the men that come to see me, that they need a bit of that accountability. They need a bit of that like person in their corner, kind of supporting them and cheering them on, which counseling, you know, the framework of it didn't really allow for. So that was a bit of a rant, man, sorry, but hopefully that made sense as to why I'm kind of where I'm at now.
It's cool. Well, I've never actually heard you speak to that journey before, so it's interesting to me, and I imagine anyone who's listening who's interested in potentially going down a similar path, like, it's useful to hear how other people got to where they are. And I don't know how exactly it's done in Australia, but I'm relatively familiar with the counseling therapy realm in the States. I've talked to a lot of different therapists, sex therapists too. I've considered going to graduate school many times for sex therapy, well, just to get a counseling degree and then to do a certificate in sex therapy. But what I've learned from talking with a lot of these sex therapists is like they are like very limited in what they can do and what they can and can't talk about. And there's so many like regimented things and red tape that they can't go through. And it's just like, wow, I don't want to spend $60,000 and 3+ years of my life just to get a degree so I can take insurance. Like, I can already help people, you know? And like, I don't want to go in blindly. Like, I have gotten a bunch of training, and I imagine like you and like most of the male sex coaches I know out there, like, we actually took a lot of different individual trainings and brought things into sort of like a hodgepodge of our own unique style from like, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 different trainings, to put it all together. 'Cause to my knowledge, up until what you're doing now, like there isn't a male specific sex coaching program out there. Maybe there is, I don't know about it. I know there's a couple really popular ones for women. I know there's a couple mixed gender ones, but not specifically focusing on men. So
that's pretty cool. I've done my competitor analysis, man, and I couldn't find any. So I think what I'm putting together is relatively unique. And the more people I tell about it, and when I say the more people, I'm talking about like sex therapists and sexologists and sex educators, the more I say to them, like, hey, I put this thing together specifically for working with men, and it incorporates the program itself incorporates what's called a sexual attitudes reassessment, or a SAR for short. And I'm like, that's a specific SAR that's like about male sexuality and men's experiences. And the feedback that I've gotten, which has been really lovely actually, has been like, thank God, finally, we need something like this. Like, it's about time that there's something like this. So it's I feel really affirmed by my colleagues, which is really lovely. And I'm super grateful, and I feel really humbled that I've been able to consult with so many of them and, you know, incorporate that into the curriculum. But yeah, you're right. When it comes to like specifically talking about male sexuality, we can even see this in the research, man. Like, sexuality research for, you know, a long time has just been like, yeah, male sexuality is just simple, straightforward, it's uncomplicated, yeah, it's all about function, and, you know, it just flattens men's experiences, you know, like it just treats men as like malfunctioning machines, and it's a very it takes the urological approach, right? It's like very urology and pharmacological, and, you know, it's totally. Here's a pill to fix your problem, and it's not very holistic at all. So so it's been like a passion project of mine to like really change the way that collectively we speak about male sexuality. And, you know, part of that is, as you mentioned at the onset of this podcast, is like getting men to speak with one another about sexuality in a much more, what might I want to say, in a much more in-depth way, right? Like, guys talk about sex, don't get me wrong. I spoke about sex all the time with my mates back in the day, but it was very surface level. It was very performative, let's say, and it was very juvenile as well. Like, it was, you know, I've got a big dick, or I'm the God's gift to women. You know, it was like bravado and machismo, which is not conducive to having like vulnerable, deeper conversations about sexuality. So yeah, I'm a big,
and
a
also big not conducive to helping you have amazing sex.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're right. So, yeah, I feel like I don't know where I was going with that, but just, yeah, wanted to go on another rant. So thanks for reining me in.
Yeah. Man, it's interesting stuff to me. So, all right, a couple of questions. Just to hear your perspective on it, what do you think some of the value could be for a man to work with another male sex coach? Like, why hire a coach?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head earlier, which is like there's a sense of resonance with experiences. Like, I am very open about my lived experiences, you know, and you know, my drinking and the sexual dysfunctions that I've overcome, my relationship with pornography, things like that. And I think by being open about that, that's one of the major reasons why guys will come and work with me, because they kind of see themselves in that story. Like, oh, he's been there. He knows how that feels. He's had the same, you know, experiences or similar experiences. You know, he's grappled with this question around his masculinity and his sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes guys feel seen and heard, and then ultimately safe to have a conversation with me about it, because they're like, cool, Cam gets it. And for the most part, I do my best to try and get it as well. You know, I try and be very, like I said, non-judgmental, and really try and listen to my clients and you know, empathize with where they're at. And so that's like one reason, I think, is why a guy might want to see another guy. I think another reason as well is, like, you know, we are able to talk about like the specific things that come up for us during sex as well. Right? Like, I can speak to a guy about that tension point right before ejaculation where you're like, oh my God, I'm going to lose control, I'm going to come, and the things to do in those moments, because I have a lived experience of that, right? I know that, and it still happens to me. And it's like this, you know, we can take it not so seriously, because we can make a joke about it, and then we can go a bit deeper and be like, and here's some practical ways of doing that. And I think that's helpful for guys to be like, great, I can troubleshoot this with you, because we're having like that same, we are on the same page with regards to what that experience actually feels like, and noticing that in the body. And I think there's a bit more opportunity to like really like empathize somatically with them. Be like, yeah, cool, I know where that feels in my balls. I know where that feels in the tip of my cock, right? Like there's a resonance with that, a woman or someone with a vulva like wouldn't necessarily be able to do. They'd be able to speak. And here's where I think it's also valuable to have female coaches, because they can speak from the other end of that perspective, right? Totally. Which is, what is it like to be on the receiving end of a guy who is embodied in a sexuality, who is being communicative and open, right? Like a heterosexual female coach could be like, this is what it's like, and I'm telling you, here's what it feels like as a woman to be on the receiving end of that. And oftentimes what I'll do is I'll work in tandem with a female coach, one of my colleagues, when a guy is at a particular point in his sex coaching journey, and it's important for him to now learn about like women's anatomy and what it's like for women to be, you know, when he's like creating that space and he's holding the container for them to surrender and be in their pleasure. Coming from me, that's gonna like land so. Coming from a woman who's like embodies that, because I don't have sex with men, but she does, and she knows what it's like to be with men who are in that space, it's going to come from a much more embodied perspective. And she's going to talk about women's anatomy, she's going to talk about like the clitoris and the womb and the cervix and the labia. And like, again, I can educate about that. I don't have labia, I don't have a clitoris, I don't have a womb. So it's not, it like the level of embodiment that comes with that transmission of information and education is just like not to the same degree as it would be coming from someone who literally has those parts of their body and has had those lived experiences. So I don't want to say that it's only men who men should talk to. I think there's so much value in having both, you know, men and women teachers.
Totally. Agreed. Yeah, I agree. There's another piece I'd like to add around just like why work with a coach in general. And I'll just think back to the first times I hired a coach. It was actually, I hired business coaches first. And I remember when I was doing that, so I live in Asheville, North Carolina, which is a little bit north of Atlanta. Georgia. I think it's like 3.5-4 hours, something like that. Closest to where you were when you were in the States. And in Asheville, at least in the particular community that I'm a part of, there's not really so much business acumen, right? Like, there's not a lot of business intelligence or strength. And I say that not to be like, oh, people are dumb. It's just like, no, the community has prioritized other things, has really prioritized emotional intelligence, connection, play, touch, aliveness. You know, there's yoga, ecstatic dance, breath work, all that stuff happening constantly. And it's beautiful. And one of the things that's lacking there is more like the financial acumen. Like, how do you actually make a business out of stuff? You know, how do you support yourself? And so one of the biggest benefits I got from first hiring my business coaches was that they were not living in the reality that I was living in. They were living in a fundamentally different place, like a different city, but in an entirely different community. And their concept and their frame of business and money was just totally different from what I had. And I never would have been able to even conceptualize what was possible if I had just stayed in my Asheville bubble. Like, I had to go out and be in their field, you could sort of say. And so when I, to make the jump to sex coaching, like, when I am working with people as a coach, like, it's my intention that not only am I talking and guiding people through practices and exercises to experience growth, but like, I'm also holding a certain kind of energetic and a certain kind of pull and doing my own practices to be in a state of presence and consciousness to be able to live as, and I'm saying this, like, this is not me saying I'm better than, but like, living as a practice of what's actually possible. Like, I'm fucking committed to showing up for my practices so that I can live in a way that's authentically useful for other people, you know? Mm. And I imagine you do the same. And I think that that's a real benefit of working with a coach that I've never really experienced when I've worked with a therapist per se. It's like a different dynamic. Maybe there are some therapists who do that, but in all my experience working with different therapists, they're very much dedicated to my growth and success, but they're not really transmitting things to me. They're not holding a different framework for what's possible. They're not holding the idea of, oh, hey, by the way, you could have sex for an hour and experience amazing pleasure that lasts for way longer than the 7-second typical ejaculatory orgasm. You know, it's like one thing to say that, but it's another thing to embody that. And yeah, that just felt like that just came through.
Yeah, I do really appreciate that insight, man. I think that's really beautiful. And I think it's one of the reasons why as well, it's important for coaches to have coaches or coaches to have supervisors or mentors themselves. You know, that's a standard in counseling and in therapy and in other, you know, more regulated practices, let's say. And it's not so much in the coaching space. The coaching space is still a little bit like the wild, wild west at times, which is has its perks and has, you know, there's a lot of like really fascinating clandestine, you know, transformative stuff happening, and it allows for that because of the unregulated nature of the industry. And then also we're getting people who like aren't seeing supervisors, aren't unpacking their shit, maybe projecting onto clients. And so there are obviously big pros and cons to both of those. I kind of liken it to the psychedelic space, like the psychedelic clandestine underground, you know, industry. There's like some incredibly powerful healing work being done with psychedelics, obviously, you know, in an illegal sense, if we're, you know, thinking of the legality of it. And there's some really not great stuff happening with psychedelics as well. I feel like that's pretty similar to like the sex coaching, sexuality industry as well. There's like amazing stuff happening, and you know, rightly so, it needs to be pointed out, there's not some great stuff happening. But it's one of the things I really want to do specifically like with my work and with the certification is try and bring a bit more, how do I want to say this politely, like just some like professional standards into the space. Like, I really want there to be like comprehensive education for the coaches themselves. I'm an advocate for like continued professional development and for supervision for coaches, particularly like my students. If they're going to be going through my certification, it's an expectation that afterwards they continue to get either peer supervision or one-on-one supervision, and that doesn't have to be with me, so I'm not locking them into some sort of like paying, you know, ongoing thing. But I help them find a supervisor. And you know, the standard of education there and the depth of it, I think, is really important, because sex coaching as a title, or you know, calling yourself a sex coach, is not protected, right? You could people listening to this, you know, I don't advocate for it, but could call themselves a sex coach today and start working with clients tomorrow. Obviously not with the protection of insurance, but like your, like there's nothing legally stopping you because the title isn't protected. So it's actually the same with sexologist. In many, many countries, the title sexologist is not protected. I think there's only maybe one country in Europe where it is protected as a profession, as a title that you can call yourself. Like, you can't call yourself a doctor, for example, but you can call yourself a sexologist. And people are doing that, right? They read a book and now all of a sudden they're a sexologist or a sex coach. And so my intention, like I said, with the curriculum is to build a depth of knowledge and a depth of knowledge I think is, you know, necessary and adequate for then being comfortable going into a coaching role. And as part of that, there's like a supervised practicum, and there's I have a roster of volunteer clients who, you know, come from my own audience. I kind of put the call out there and say, you know, with your informed consent, do you agree to, like, you know, helping a student with their practicum? And I think all of that is like necessary for, I mean, coaches in general, but I don't see it happening to the degree that I think it should. And so I'm like internally trying to balance that, like the professional standards versus like the clandestine nature of the work, and find that happy medium. And I think maybe just because of my own background in, you know, the academic spaces, I lean a little bit more towards the standardization kind of route and the ethical guidelines and things like that, whereas maybe some of my colleagues, you know, through no fault of their own or even it being a bad thing, maybe lean towards more of like the unregulated clandestine kind of like underground space. And again, both have their advantages and disadvantages, and it's like trying to hold that tension point, I suppose.
I agree. And I think it's useful to, yeah, like you said, just acknowledge the reality of the sex coaching industry right now, which is that anyone could call themselves a sex coach, and lots of people are calling themselves sex coaches, and including myself. And there is no governing body, you know, like most, I don't publicize a list of all the trainings that I've done. Maybe I should, and that might be interesting for people. But interestingly also, nobody has asked me for that. Like hundreds, you know, thousands of people have taken my programs. Not once has anybody said, "Hey, can I see a list of your credentials?" You know, so it's an interesting thing to consider. Like, people ultimately seem to just really care about how can I improve my life? Like, can you help me with what I'm struggling with? If so, if I believe you can, and then if you actually do, like, perfect. I don't care if you went to school or not. And, you know, and I think at the same time, there, I do really agree that there is a usefulness to some sort of standardization, or at least some baseline level of, hey, here are some skills you need to have, and here are some things you need to be aware of if you are going to be in a space holding position for anybody, sex coaching or not. So I'm curious, in your program, and just in terms of what you believe and what you see, like, what do you think are some of the foundational skills a person needs to have in order to be a sex coach for somebody else?
Yeah, one of the things that comes to my mind, I suppose, is, I mean, my curriculum is specifically designed for working with men as, you know, male clients, right. So I'll put that caveat in there. But I think one of the foundational things is an understanding of, well, an in-depth understanding of masculinity. You know, there's like a very strong narrative at the moment that like masculinity is one thing, right? And if it's, and it's either good or it's bad, and there's like, this is what good masculinity is, this is what bad masculinity is. And it's like the underlying implication is that like masculinity is like monolithic and it's, you know, non-varied, I suppose. And like my, and so what my curriculum goes into in a lot of depth is like looking at the historical context of masculinity, looking at contemporary versions of masculinity, like this acknowledgement that masculinity as a singular doesn't really exist, but masculinity's plural exists by the hundreds, and it's almost like unique to the man sitting in front of you, what he defines as masculine. Yeah. And is that coming from stories that he heard like around him, or is it coming from stories that he is generating from himself? And you know, that's like a bit of a narrative therapy approach. So I think that's one foundational piece, is like, you know, not just prescribing this is what it means to be a man, and you know, and I see a lot of our colleagues doing that, right? It's like, this is what masculinity means, and this is what you need to do in order to be masculine. And I don't think that's helpful at all, to be totally honest with you. I don't think it's a net positive. One of the other things I think is foundational for like working with men, especially as a sex coach, is like a good sexological foundation, like understanding why erectile dysfunction happens, why premature ejaculation happens. And I'm, you know, I have a big, I don't want to say this politely, man. I love the sex coaching industry and I don't want to step on my colleagues' toes. But what I don't like is a one size fits all approach to a sexual problem. So when I see people advertising, like, do you have erectile dysfunction? This will be the thing that solves your erectile dysfunction. You will never have erectile dysfunction again if you do this thing. And immediately I go, well, what if they have vasculogenic erectile dysfunction? What if they have neurogenic erectile dysfunction? What if they have iatrogenic erectile dysfunction because it's caused by medication? What if it's psychological erectile dysfunction? And very often what they're referring to is psychological erectile dysfunction, right? And because I'm familiar with the diagnostic and statistical manual of mental diseases, so like the DSM, so I know the criterion for a clinical diagnosis of erectile dysfunction. And what I know, speaking to men every single day, is that many men with psychological ED don't actually fit the clinical definition of erectile dysfunction. They just don't have reliable erections. They like they don't have as strong erections as they want, or they aren't getting it up as quickly as they would like, but they don't actually meet the diagnostic criterion to be labeled with clinical erectile dysfunction. So even when we're saying like this is going to solve your erectile dysfunction issue, they're not actually solving quote unquote erectile dysfunction in the clinical sense. They're maybe just helping guys have more reliable erections, which is great, right? And
which is great.
Yeah, it is great. But there's an important distinction for me there, right? Because again, I come from the sexological background, and I think it's important for us to understand that. So one of the things that I embed into the curriculum is like a strong referral practice. So if you're screening a client and they have vasculogenic ED, because you're able to ask those questions and you're even aware of what that actually means, and for those that are unfamiliar, it means that the blood flow is literally not happening for that erection to happen in the first place, because there's maybe venous leak syndrome, and that might be due to whatever, could be a medical condition, whatever, doesn't matter. Like you've got a person who you can refer on so that they can be supported in that, right? Because the last thing we want is for you to be applying a psychological approach or a pleasure-based approach, right, to this person's erection issues, and them to not see any improvement, and maybe for then you to go as a coach, well, you're just not doing enough practices, you're not doing the right practice, or like you haven't applied yourself enough, which I see happening, right? When it's like you're not even targeting the actual cause of his erection issues in the first place. Sure, he might have a much more sex positive perspective and he might be like having a variety of new sexual experiences, which is great. But if his root problem is something that needs to be addressed through minimally invasive surgery or going and seeing a urologist, like you've got to be aware of that, right? You've got to, like that, you have to have that knowledge from that. Yeah. Again, that's a sexological perspective to be like, all right, this is probably the best course of action. And I work a lot in tandem with urologists and I get them refer clients to me because they're like, great, we're sorting out his issue from this. I got a client at the moment who has Peyronie's. He's working with a urologist around the Peyronie's, which is a curvature of the penis due to scar tissue in this particular case. And like, awesome, he's getting that sorted out with some ultrasound therapy and some other stuff that he's doing with a urologist, stuff that I don't do with him because firstly, I'm not qualified and I don't really have a passion for working with the fixing of scar tissue. I'm not a remediation therapist in that regard, but I can talk to him about like decentering his penis when he's being sexual so that he's exploring the rest of his body, and that when he's having sex with his partner, we can talk about the different positions that are comfortable for his cock when it does have a bit of a curve in it, and it's also going to be comfortable for his partner. I can talk about using some toys, for example, so that he's not so reliant on penetration because he does have the unreliable erections because it hurts when he gets an erection. So we can talk about all that. We can give him practical advices to still be sexual and still enjoy sex and still connect with his partner, because I recognize that there's a need for that, and there's also this need for him resolving that issue with someone who's qualified in that particular thing. So I know that's a long-winded way of saying that, like, I think a strong sexological foundation is really important for people in this industry as well, because I see a lot of people having a one-size-fits-all approach and that not being, like, it's not effective.
Totally. Yeah, I appreciate that for sure. Makes sense. And I think useful to say that, yeah, just to reiterate, like lots of people, there is this societal narrative that men's sexuality is really straightforward and clean cut and just like, you don't, you know, you're not performing well, do this one thing, you'll be fine. But we're really nuanced creatures. Like we're actually like deeply nuanced beings, and there is no one size fits all approach. Yeah, I like that. What else? Any other things jump out at you for like, here's what makes a good sex coach for men specifically?
I mean, I think, this is more general, I suppose, but like some understanding of like general counseling skills is always good. I come from a counseling background, so my curriculum includes a lot of that. How to ask specific questions, how to gather information, you know, and create that non-judgmental space for guys to share and open up. And I have found in my work that creating a space for men to open up is slightly different than creating a space for women to open up. Mm. What I mean by that is like, I'll be much more direct and to the point with the men that I work with. And I used to work with women as well, and now I exclusively work with men, but I sometimes go to I'm invited to go to women's workshops and things like that and speak about male sexuality. And what I found is that like, I can be much more, I am much more like assertive, penetrative, and like to the point with my male clients. And the reason why is because I have observed that that makes them feel more confident in me to then open up and be vulnerable and share about a specific thing that I'm asking about. So for example, I will speak to a lot of guys about the way that they masturbate, right? And I will ask them really specific detailed questions about where they touch their cock, how firm they are, what type of stroking they're doing, what type of porn they're watching, what position they're in. And I'll be very direct and to the point. I'll preface all those that conversation, all those questions with like a, hey man, I'm going to ask you some pretty personal questions. You're by no means obliged to answer any of these, but the more you're able to share with me, the better I'm able to tailor my coaching to you. So I ask you to be as honest and as open as possible. If you want to set a boundary, you know, I want to put the ball in your court there. You can say no to answering anything. I will say thank you and I'll move on. So I create a bit of space for them to, you know, have some agency. And then I'll just be like, all right, let's jump in. And I'll ask really pointed questions. And not to say that you can't do that with women, of course, but I've found that the conversations that I've had with women is much more, like I can ask really open-ended questions and women feel more comfortable speaking into their experiences when I just kind of leave it open-ended. For guys, if I leave it open-ended, I get very short responses and I'm like, that told me fucking nothing then. And so I've got to really like be, I've got to really like I said, penetrate and go a bit deeper with those questions. So so that's like, you know, a counseling skill, so to speak, right? Or a coaching skill is like being able to like have that approach. And same thing with like educating as well. Like I'll be very matter of fact with my clients and the information that I share with them is, I tend not to beat around the bush with them, and I'll try and be, and this has evolved over time because when I used to teach yoga, I was much more, you know, I had long hair, I had long dreadlocks as a matter of fact, and, you know, mala beads, and I was, and I spoke much more, I was just much more inclined to use like energetics and esoteric language and things like that because that's where I was at the time. And I found the type of men that I want to work with, that doesn't resonate with them so much. And again, if I speak to women, I might use language that's a bit more esoteric, and I might mention more of the energetics and the emotions. And not that I don't do that with guys, but I typically don't start there. I very much start with like, here's the practical piece of advice, here's the reason why I'm suggesting that you do it. And as they start to like buy in, sounds like I'm trying to like, you know, manipulate them into something, but like as they start to realize, oh, this actually works, oh, there's a reason why I'm doing this, oh, I'm seeing the benefits, and I'll start to layer on like the energetic conversation, the esoteric, the mystery tradition, and like the extra added stuff that I think is valuable, but I wouldn't have started there because I know that would put the guys that I work with particularly off. And I'm talking like just your mainstream fellas, you know, like I'm working with tradies and with, you know, guys that work in offices and things like that. So it's something that lands for them. It's like that language. And I think that's not that I'm saying you have to talk like that, but I think having the awareness of like, oh, this is the type of language that's going to resonate with these particular people versus this is the type of language that's going to resonate with those particular type of people is a skill to have as a coach. That'll make you a good coach, in my opinion.
For sure. Yeah, 100%. Cool. Deep understanding of male sexuality, deep understanding that it's nuanced and not one size fits all, understanding of masculinity, current concepts, past concepts, like that it's not one thing also, and counseling skills. And then I was looking at the website or the syllabus. I downloaded your syllabus to check it out. And
thanks, man.
You've got a bunch of different guest teachers for a lot of different topics. And there's like BDSM, there's squirting, there's consent, there's disability, there's psychedelics, there's yoni mapping, homosexuality, reflexology, tantra, nootropics, and more. And I'm thinking, wow, that's awesome. It's so good to include all that, because all that plays a role in men's sexuality. And then there's one that I'm wanting to ask you to share about too. You have, I think, one of the main instructors is known for some of their anti-racism work. And there's a question I'd love to ask you, which is, in your perspective, how does anti-racism work fit into a program around learning how to coach men to improve their sex lives?
Yeah, it's a great question, man. And it's a question that invariably at least one or two of the students will also ask me at the beginning of the year when we do our first session with Kakai. Anti-racism educator, his name's Kakai Nosakere. And he's been on my podcast, so if people are interested in hearing him talk, he's a very powerful speaker. And one of the things that he and I have spoken about, and one of the reasons why I have helped I've asked him to contribute to the curriculum, is because there are experiences that black men have that revolve around their masculinity and sexuality, which white men typically don't experience. Right. So I recognize I'm speaking on behalf of some black men at the moment, so just being mindful of that. But from the conversations I've had with black men and brown indigenous men of color as well, like the socialization of hyper masculinity and hyper virility, and like even just the everyone's probably aware of like the stereotype of like black men having bigger cocks, for example. Like there are like, again, specific unique things that relate to masculinity and sexuality that black men experience that other male clients might not. So having an awareness of that is I think imperative if we're going to be good coaches, right? And I'll share an experience of one of the students from the first year that I did the certification. He expressed to me in one of our group calls, why are we doing this, right? Similar question to yourself, like what's the reason for incorporating this anti-racism education? Yeah. And I kind of said to him, what I've just said here, like, there's stuff that we need to be aware of, and some of our clients will have different cultural and racial experiences to us, as all my students are white. And then as part of a supervised practicum, he didn't realize this, but one of his practicum clients was a black man, and I get to review the calls because they're recorded, and I review them for supervision purposes. And so on that call, this student was able to like ask really relevant, pertinent questions about that client's sexuality and masculinity experiences. And on the call, you can hear that client say like, wow, thank you for taking that into consideration. Thank you for asking that. You are right. I am having this experience, and thank you for acknowledging that. And you could see after that, like, there was more vulnerability, there's more rapport, there is more openness to share about experiences. And even though maybe my student couldn't directly relate to the experience that black man was having as, a black man in America, but there was like an understanding of like, this is contextually relevant and important for my lived experience, and thank you for acknowledging that. And so I feel like I open a bit more up to, and I've had men of color reach out to me and say like, hey, I would love to do coaching, but I don't particularly want to work with someone who's white. I would like to work with someone who's maybe the same racial or ethnic background as me, because I feel more comfortable speaking to them, right? So that might be true. Right. I won't obviously mention any names, but I've had some Indian men reach out to me, for example, and say like, I would love to work with someone who's an Indian, because I feel like if I was working with a white dude, I would have to do a lot of explaining about my cultural heritage and like why things are the way they are. And although I try and be across that as an educator myself, because I think it's important for me to know about it, I do get that there's some labor that they would have to do some emotional labor, some conversational labor to kind of get me up to speed before I can then start helping them. And they're like, I just don't have the capacity to do that right now. I would love someone who just immediately gets it, knows what I'm talking about, doesn't have to be explained. And so that is one of the reasons why I think, you know, anti-racism education is an important part of all of our works, you know, but sect coaching specifically, because of like what I was sharing around, the differences that different men of different races experience, in society. It's the same for, you know, I've worked with, several, Asian Australian men, for example, and they've expressed similar sentiments to me, and the fact that like society kind of doesn't take their masculinity seriously and their sexuality is kind of not seen as, you know, what they would like it to be, for example. And so like they're experiencing unique issues related to their race and how that impacts their sexuality and their masculinity. So I think that's important to understand as coaches. And again, it speaks to the whole, we can't have a one size fits all approach, right? Because it doesn't work.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the way you spoke to that. When I saw that on the curriculum, I thought, fuck yeah, that's awesome. That's really cool. And it's inspiring to see. And I think it is really important. And one of the things that scares me a little bit about the current landscape of sex coaching online is, I guess I'll just say, like, I'll own that it's a judgment on my part, but I'll judge that there are a lot of people out there saying things, teaching things from really only their perspective, like, and not spending a lot of time or investing energy or money or resources in trying to learn about other people's experiences and realize that, hey, other people have grown up in entirely different scenarios and have been socialized entirely differently and have received different kinds of programming and imprinting from society that you have never received and that I have never received. And it's like such a great disservice to them and to the world, like, if I don't investigate that, you know, and if I don't figure out how to at least, like, no, I won't be able to relate in the same way, but I can at least be aware that you've experienced something different, and then bring that awareness into the conversation, into the connection, for the sake of more ease and healing. And I'm stoked about that.
Thanks.
And let's see how to say this. There's this one other piece that, I guess jumping back to one of the first points you made about what makes somebody a good coach, like, there is this idea, like you said, that men's sexuality like lives in this little box isolated into a very mechanistic, formulaic, functioning response, you know? And the reality is that it all impacts that. Like you talked about those guys, like their cultural upbringing is just different from ours. And those programs impact their sexual functioning and their performance in different ways that like just don't, they're just not the same. We're very nuanced beings, and just being open to the possibility that there are differences is helpful. And I was stoked to see that you have homosexuality and different sexual orientations in there too, because for the same reason, you know.
Yeah, and that's something that I plan on building out a little bit more. So at the moment, the lecture around homosexuality and gay men in particular is done by Dr. Joe Court, but my intention is to build an entire, might call it like elective, around like homosexuality and sexual diversity, and particularly like how to work with queer men. That's what I'm going to kind of call it, is, you know, how to work with queer men. And because I think that's, you know, relevant and necessary for coaches who do want to work specifically with queer men, or maybe not specifically, but they want to be able to serve, you know, queer, gay, pan, you know, whatever diverse sexual expression their male clients have. And that, like, and there are unique and specific relevant things to take into consideration there as well. And, you know, what I've observed, and you might, you know, be aware of this as well, is like how there's like I've kind of seen two tantra communities, right? There's like the heterosexual tantra community, and then there's like the gay male tantra community, right? And those two spaces don't really talk a lot, right? They're both quite insular, I suppose. And I've seen like little inklings of like tantra for gay women, but like predominantly I've seen the gay male tantra spaces, and it's just interesting to observe that, and to then make the acknowledgement of like, oh, okay, there must be something that's being offered in the gay male tantra spaces that they're not getting from like the quote unquote heteronormative, you know, tantra spaces, or like the more prolific mainstream spaces. So So that's like my intention, is to bring some of those men on and do some guest speaking and create a curriculum that's around that. Similarly, I want to create an elective around men's groups as well. So like how to host and run a men's group, because I get a lot of students want to do that and they're not sure how. And so creating some curriculum around like specifically how to do that and incorporate the conversations around sex, which as we mentioned before, are like super important, to how to facilitate those. So that's another elective I want to add on.
Yeah, that's an awesome one. I did a podcast on that specifically with one of the guys who's in my men's group, who's done a lot of male liberation work as well. And like anyone listening to this, you can look that up. It's just called How to Start a Men's Group. It's not a full course, but you'll hear some of my own personal men's group in there and how we navigate different things and how we structure everything.
Amazing.
And I also wanted to just backtrack. If you're watching this on YouTube, if we did post it, if the video works out from this episode, because we have some technical things happening, but you might have seen that I was laughing when you were talking about like the gay men in the heterosexual tantra spaces. Just to explain that, it's because I'm thinking basically 99% of the tantra spaces that I've been in have basically been like, men go here, women go over here. And now the men interact with the women in this sexualized way. Mm-hmm. And then you breathe. And then you do certain energetic practices with the opposite gender for the sake of that. So I'm like, yeah, of course, it would make sense that people who are anything other than heterosexual would be not as excited to go into those spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just not appropriate for them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have been in some. Yeah, I have been in a couple that have been like not that way, but they were very specifically spoken to as not that way. Like one was even called a queer tantra workshop at a tantra festival, and I was like, I'm going to go to this just to see what's happening here. And it was super cool. Mm. And it's like, oh, yeah, of course. Like you can run energy with anybody. Like you can do breath work with anybody. Like
I've been very lucky to have, as part of people who I consider mentors, some gay and queer men. And like the insights that I've gained about my own masculinity and my own sexuality from having really beautifully deep conversations with them about their experience of masculinity has been like so impactful and transformative, and helped me like really unpack and understand myself more. And so, yeah, I'm a big advocate for straight men. I work with straight men, so like for straight dudes, just like talking to other people about their experiences of masculinity, whether that person be from another race or culture, or from a another sexual orientation or sexual perspective, because there's so much that we can learn about ourselves listening to other people, and there's so much reflective like questioning that can be done after those conversations.
100%. Yeah, and if you're listening to this and you don't know me and my work either, I'll just clarify, like the vast majority of men that I work with are heterosexual. I've worked with many gay and bi men as well, but the majority who work with me are heterosexual. And I think probably because I'm heterosexual and all the personal stories I share are about my experiences with women, because that's my lived experience. And if there are people who want to work with other coaches, I'll recommend other folks.
Yes, similarly, I do the same, man. So I'm very upfront about like who my target audience is and who I am really passionate about working with. And I'll get people who are gay, bi. I've even had like non-binary and trans folks reach out, and they're like, do you work with us, with me? And I'll say, I'm probably not the best person to do so, but they're usually like, I don't know anyone else. So I'll send them on to people who I think would be much more aligned for what it is they're looking for and who's going to best serve them. So having a robust referral practice, like I said before, is like integral to being a good coach, in my opinion, rather than trying to work with everyone who crosses your pathway.
Totally. Yeah. Well, man, this has been really interesting conversation. Thanks for sharing about your program and your own personal life and practice as a coach. And I'm wondering, are there any other pieces that you'd like to add about this program before we wrap up, just to say like, here's what makes this unique, here's this very specific thing about it that's special, or I'm curious.
I do. The thing that I'd like to add is that in between trimester one and trimester two, there's what's called a sexual attitudes reassessment, or a SAR, as I mentioned before in the conversation. So a sexual attitudes reassessment is a typically 2 to 5 day intensive, and the idea behind it is that we show you a bunch of really explicit media, and sometimes that's sexually explicit media, so it's pornography, or it's explicit media in the sense that maybe it's violent, or it's, you know, there's something else that's explicit about it. And the intention is to create a space where you can feel triggered by that media, and in a small group over the course of several days, process what that triggering is around, right? So as the name suggests, it's attitudes reassessment, and it's specifically related to sexuality. So we're trying to figure out what are your sexual attitudes and biases and values, and you know, the way that we figure that out is by pushing the limits, pushing your edges, finding out where those trigger points are, allowing that to surface, and then working through with some processing questions, with small group discussion, with embodiment facilitation. And so that when you're able to go and, you know, step into the coaching space, if someone brings up something with you that is a trigger for you or is an edge for you around like their sexual attitudes and values, you're able to hold that. And then if you need to do some processing, you're able to then take that to a supervisor, take it to a peer group, take it to someone who maybe is your own coach and go, hey, this is like coming up for me. And I was able to hold it in the moment because I have the capacity to do that now because I'm aware of it. But I also need to do processing, you know, elsewhere because this was a trigger for me. So it's a really valuable part of sex therapy training and sex education training. It's actually a requirement for continued professional development for sex therapists and sexuality educators, both in Europe, Australia, and America. And so I've been like, I put the curriculum together for the sexual attitudes reassessment with Dr. Selena Chris, who is the World Association of Sex Coaches head. And she trained directly under a lady called Patty Britton, who literally wrote the book on sexual attitudes reassessment. She kind of created the first ever one. Dr. Patty's been on my podcast as well. So there's a direct lineage there of like sexual attitudes reassessment training that, you know, I take from Patty and Selena. And then the person who co-facilitates with me is a woman by the name of Sarah Martin. Sarah wrote her dissertation on pickup artists, interestingly enough. And so it's got a really in-depth understanding about that online community. And she was the previous head of the World Association of Sex Coaches. So she used to run all of the SARs with their particular program, which is Sex Coach University, which I don't mind plugging. Like it's a great program. It's just not male specific. The two women that have helped me put the program together, and obviously one of them helps me deliver it, are really knowledgeable and really grounded in like what a SAR is supposed to look like and supposed to mean and what you're supposed to take away from it. So it's a really impactful 5 days. So we've chosen the 5-day version of the SAR, and there's no other coaching certification other than obviously the Sex Coach University, which is affiliated with World Association of Sex Coaches. No one else offers it. And no one else offers specifically a male-specific SAR. Like, that's, we're the only people doing that in the world that I can see. So we're trying to push for it to get, like, ASEC approved and, you know, upskilling actual sex therapists and counsellors and psychosexual educators and things like that as well, because it's, like I said, necessary, and a lot of professionals recognise that. Totally. So we're doing the behind-the-scenes things that we need to do to get that properly accredited for the relevant organizational bodies. It is here in Australia, which is great because I'm part of the Society of Australian Sexologists. I'm the deputy chair, actually. So I've got, you know, some capacity to you know, get the accreditation. That is one of the major things that makes the program unique, is because we offer that, and that's not being offered anywhere else.
Yeah, I saw that and I thought, man, that looks fucking awesome. I've known about SARS for years, and that one in particular, I'm like, man, I got to figure out how to get into that somehow.
Well, we're opening up the SAR in 2024 to the public, so it'll be the students and depending on how many places we have left, I'll open up a few places to the public. So you're very welcome to reach out if you'd like, man.
Well, I'll just go ahead and say, if you do indeed open that to the public, I will be a participant in that.
Amazing, man. That's so lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, because that sounds awesome. I looked at the list of topics and I thought, wow, that'd be really, really, really good. And you can check out, if you're listening and you want to check out Cam's whole program, we can put a link in the description to check out the syllabus and all of that.
Yeah, that works for me, dude. And people are welcome to message me as well. You know, find me online and just shoot me a message. I'm happy to answer questions.
Awesome. Cam, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been rich, been interesting.